Buenos dias, live from Mission Burrito. Well, live on tape, this is. So this is not only the last podcast that I'm presenting, but it's also the first one we've ever done outside of Linux Format Towers, I believe.
No, I mean, we did one at Milbank for Ubuntu.
Ah, we did.
Remember the clickety-click cameras?
Ah, yes, that everyone complained about, yeah. Of course. But this is something new, isn't it, guys? We are in the South's best burrito shop. Not bad.
And we're not joking.
We're not actually joking. You can probably hear stuff in the background. You can hear glasses clinking here as we're drinking Jarritos.
Jarritos.
Jarritos, says FB. Yeah, and we're all looking forward to some lovely...
surreal burritos. Podcast. Oh, yeah, burritos. Yeah, that's...
And burritos as well. We just happen to be in Bath, but of course there are Mission Burritos in Bristol, Oxford and Reading as well. So we'll let you know just how much we love the food we're going to sample after this. And Effie's taking a photo, so you'll be able to actually see this podcast in action. Or he's taking some video footage, I believe.
Yeah, video.
Cool. Good work, Effie. Anyway, I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
And I'm Efrain Hernandez.
And in this episode, we will be talking about Fedora 16's release, we've got our discoveries of the week, rants and raves, I'll be having a nice rant there about Commodore, or what is now Commodore, Speak Your Brains, and of course, the Open Ballot. If you love this podcast, then you'll definitely love the fine magazine that we spend all the time making, Linux Format. You can subscribe at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer and keep us in burritos. So, So let's get straight into the news. And Fedora 16 has been released.
Well done.
Yeah,
well done to the Fedora team.
Fedora team.
Congratulations.
Allow me to read out some of the amazing new features: enhanced cloud support, including Aeolus Conductor, Condor Cloud, Haycar File System, OpenStack, and Pacemaker Cloud. There's GNOME 3.2, KDE 4.7, a number of core system improvements, including Grub 2 and the removal of HAL. So I guess the biggest user-facing change there is GNOME 3.2.
Yeah, it sounds like a good release. I haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but I'm sure it's excellent. What's all was that cloud stuff really first on its new features list?
That stuff is really big, though. And I know for, you know, home desktop users it's not. But I've been reading a lot recently about... I can't tell you what it does, but I've been reading a lot recently about Aeolus.
However you pronounce it.
And OpenStack. You know, people are talking about as really popular ways for managing cloud infrastructure and setting up your own cloud in, you know, deploying your own cloud like Rackspace or whatever and going from your own cloud up to a Rackspace or an Amazon-based instance in just a few clicks.
I totally agree. It's big. Things like OpenStack are brilliant. But is my microphone working? Yeah. But does that come ahead of GNOME 3.2?
It depends. I think it probably is a bigger change than GNOME 3.2. GNOME 3.2 is just an incremental upgrade, whereas the inclusion of these things by default for enterprise users, it might not be for home users, but for enterprise users, it's massive.
But enterprise users are going to use CentOS.
I know that, but first of all, it goes into Fedora, doesn't it, before it makes its way into Red Hat. So knowing it's there and knowing you can start using these technologies and learning how they work and practicing deploying them, I think that's a big deal.
Okay.
Aeolus, is that what it's called?
Something along this...
A-E-O-L-U-S.
Yeah, that's the
Greek god of
one of the four winds.
Cloud computing.
Yeah. Greek god of cloud computing, that's right.
Yeah.
It's just sitting on top of the cloud.
Oh,
just overlooking.
Throwing down lightning bolts at all the unbelievers.
Yeah, I do really like Fedora. I'll update my system at home. And I played around with the cloud stuff when it was included in Ubuntu. So maybe I'll give it a go now. I can remember Eucalyptus being a real pain to get running, though.
I still don't really get the cloud myself. I still don't really find many things, apart from using Google Docs. I really jump for joy, saying, wow, the cloud, it's going to revolutionize anything. Maybe because...
Again, not from like a user perspective, perhaps, but if you're a company operating something like Gmail, the cloud, where I think the idea isn't so much, you know, it's different to a server. It's, you know, easily scalable servers that are completely transparent to each other.
But it's also control.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you actually think of you run on your own successful website, it doesn't even have to be big. Say it's TuxRadar and you actually own that instance. You could move it to a different ISP. You can, you know, if you get a hit on /dot, you can simply max up the number of CPUs or the amount of RAM that it has, you know.
And you can scale it back down again straight away
and
afterwards.
You can bring it back home and run it on your, you know, you can run it on your Fedora machine.
Well, that's just virtual machines, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. That is what it comes down
to. Why all this new terminology?
Because these are technologies to make all that stuff easier, to make deploying and rolling out virtual machines onto virtual processors, basically, and virtual RAM massively easier.
I can totally see them. It's a brilliant thing for hosting and for services.
Well, granted, I think the idea of cloud and stuff, it's a lot of buzzwords to go with it. Yeah. But it is also a really impressive technology and very useful technology.
I think I understand cloud computing. Cheers.
Well, all the trouble you go to, like with TradeR, to create a working version of the Ubuntu server.
Yeah.
You know, if you're that stuck on that machine that hosts it,
I'd just make a big tarball of it and put it on any machine.
Yeah, but it would be nice if it was actually an instance. You could just take that off. You could run it on your computer on our network. You can move it to a different provider and it's yours. You can configure it. You could duplicate it exactly as it is running. Hmm. You know, you could take a snapshot of it.
That means people can make copies of TuxRadar very easily.
Yes. There'll only be ever one TuxRadar.
Yes, there can only be one. Moving on, there's a chance that Banshee and even Mono could be dropped from the next Ubuntu release. Now, Ubuntu previously dropped Rhythmbox music player to switch to Banshee, and now it looks like they're going to switch back. This hasn't been confirmed yet.
And I thought.
No.
Oh, no.
That's just terrible. I'm just getting used to Banshee.
Well, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous, isn't it?
Why are they doing this?
Because
just the usability thing.
Banshee is apparently GTK 2, and they want to move everything to GTK 3.
It's certainly not the file size, is it? Because they've also announced that the next Ubuntu release is going to be 750 meg.
Yeah. At which point, why not just go to 4 gigs?
Yeah.
You know, if you have to burn that onto a DVD, then use the DVD. I don't think many people use DVD rewritables now. So, I don't know. That probably makes my Haynes Linux manual useful again. They're going back to the applications I wrote about, so I welcome this.
Available in all good bookshops near you.
And Portland, well, that might be near you.
The stupidest thing about this move is that one of the new features they're advertising in Unity for the latest Ubuntu release is the new music lens, which they advertise as having spent a lot of time integrating it with Banshee.
Oh, well.
I'd have to see it to actually know how integrated it is, but they can probably just port. They've realised actually it doesn't matter which music player they use. They can
There's an API rather than fingers crossed.
Then they might as well just write their own or use a play or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So what other ways would we like Ubuntu to regress and go back to its old self? Like
Unity.
Yeah, get rid of Unity, go back to proper GNOME. Well, GNOME 2.x.
I don't know, I mean,
I would like to see Ubuntu go back to pre-indicator times. That's when it all started to go wrong for me, was when they added the new panel indicators and started.
Yeah, we've not actually talked about it in the podcast about the next version of Mint. Did we talk about that last time?
Oh, no, we didn't. That is big news.
Because it looks like Mint is doing exactly what Ubuntu should have done, really, to GNOME Shell in taking the best parts out of it, taking the bits that will work, and also adding things like the toolbar and making it feel familiar and much more powerful than the standard GNOME 3.2 or the GNOME 2.x releases.
So presumably
it's looking really strong.
The GNOME 3.2 documentation won't apply to this particular user documentation because this will be slightly different.
Well, John and I were talking about it last week, and John's saying that this is actually what the GNOME developers wanted to happen. The documentation is there as a framework.
Yeah,
they wanted people to take it and to make usability improvements and make it their own.
That's why they wrote it in JavaScript and CSS, so anyone can take it and add what they want and what they need.
So Mint will document it because it's their distribution. At least it makes it stand out, but it also makes it work.
Well, GNOME has enabled this as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, but it just means then you've got even more slightly different desktops operating slightly different ways. If you go to get help on the forum and say, I'm running GNOME 3.2, then people have to say, are you running real GNOME 3.2 or slightly modified where things are in different places, GNOME 3.2?
Yeah, but in your world of hate, where you hate the proliferation of distributions, isn't it good that one distribution is going to do something different and actually make a state a claim for its own independence by making GNOME 3.2 a great desktop?
I would say that the problem with Linux isn't that it needs even more slightly different desktop environments.
Also, get GNOME 3.2 right.
You say that, but people don't go onto the GNOME 3.2 forum to ask questions about GNOME 3.2. They'll be on the Mint forum. asking questions about Mint from other people who also use Mint. So there won't be any confusion there.
Well, then we might as well have 50 different desktop environments.
Yeah!
Because it's like breakfast cereal.
Choice is good.
Yeah, choice is good. If you're going to have lots of distributions, I think they should do something individual and do it well. You know, and then if it wins, it wins. You know, that GNOME 3.5 might be the Mint desktop, essentially, because we all kind of agree it's got problems at the moment.
I do have sympathy with Mike's point of view that it is really frustrating at times to see all the wasted effort. Like Mike says, you know, there are three different LXD derivatives of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Why don't they all work together and create one really good? And it is frustrating at times, but, you know, other times, the ability to customize an interface for particular occasions and stuff, you know, whether you're based in a hospital or something, you might have particular requirements on that interface.
I think that's why you have really different applications to do different jobs.
But I think, no, because
but it's like having selling a range of cars, all with, you know, different buttons in slightly different place and the steering wheel on the roof in one case and stuff.
Yeah, but this is Mint. This is a major Linux distribution. It's not like some X derivative. You know, I think they're making very bold steps, and it's brilliant to see the way that they've tackled the problem of moving from 2 to 3. You know, they knew they had to do it. How the hell are they going to do it? This is the solution.
Should have just gone to XFCE.
It's now time for my second favourite section, which is Discovery of the Fortnite.
Is your favourite section
news?
The
is my
end.
Favorite section. How much have you guys discovered the last couple of weeks? Except for how awesome Mission Burrito burritos are.
I've got quite a good one. Can I share?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I discovered, kind of a rediscovery, Firefox has had a feature called Panorama, which I've never actually spent the time to look into, but I did this morning. And you can get it if you press the drop-down arrow that shows you all your open tabs. It will be show group tabs or group tabs.
Yeah.
And it basically launches a new window in Firefox. Not a new window, but an overview mode. And it's a bit like Spaces and Workspaces. And it will show all your tabs in like a square box. And then you can drag them out into new boxes and group your tabs.
Oh, right.
And you can name them. And then when you're in one group of tabs, it'll only show those tabs in the Firefox tab bar.
Ah.
And then you can switch with... You can either go back to that view and switch manually, or you can switch with control, whatever that key is above tab, backtick.
Oh, I know what you mean. It's like a reverse apostrophe.
Yeah, that one. So you can press control and back, and it will switch between different tab groups. And you can press control, shift, E to launch the overview mode. And it's actually really cool.
That's a great discovery. Mm. Yeah.
So you can have like a bunch of tabs open for your social networking sites in one space, and then a bunch of tabs will work in another space.
Or maybe if you've been working on a ton of projects, like, you know, I might be working on an article about Mozilla right now, and, you know, this morning I was researching stuff from my discovery for a week with TuxRadar. I could have a TuxRadar group and a Mozilla article group, and I think they persist across launches. I haven't tested it, so you can come back and you can be working on a project, relaunch Firefox, and go back to your group of tabs.
That's brilliant. That sounds great.
Yeah.
I've been using Firefox more and more recently because I think John and I were talking about it last week. Again, you can't actually tell the difference between speed between that and Chrome. It's maybe not quite as fast, but combined with the fact that it behaves with the default Linux window manager that you're using, you know, it's quite nice when Chrome has problems with TuxRadar.com.
Does Firefox have tab isolation on Linux?
Not yet.
That's where I get scared to have loads of tabs open, because if one can take down the whole browser, then...
Firefox is very good at recovering tabs after a crash, but you launch it up and it'll bring back all your tabs, and if it can't, it'll list them all and you can try unticking them one by one. I've never had to do that, though.
It comes up with some quite cutesy error message like, well, this is embarrassing.
Yeah. Mm. I like that.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyone else?
I discovered...
Is this your last discovery?
Yes, it is. But I discovered a... Well, no, because I'll still be in the podcast for a couple of times, but I probably won't bother coming up with discoveries then.
What are you going to do then?
Just sit in the corner and throw things at us.
Yeah, just keep you in check. I'll be a creative consultant. I've discovered a command line utility called xdotool. This is a really, really smart little tool that lets you be a virtual keyboard and mouse in the X window system. So you can script together actions to move the mouse around and send click events.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool. You can automate things like going through option screens or changing stuff in your music player by just saying move here, click, move here, right click. I think it's so cool that I've decided to write a tutorial about it for Linux Format 154, if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
First Graham's heard of it.
Whatever you want to write, we'll print it, Mike.
Excellent. So Linux Format 154. I'll still be here.
That's great. I think I remember that coming up sometime in the past, but I've never played with it. It may have been in one of our usability features. Should I do mine? You want to do yours, Effie?
I do mine if you want to. I don't mind. Mine's not as good as your, Mike.
Well, it's all about opinion, isn't it?
I suppose so. Yeah, I was trying to look for installing Scribus on my Linux box, and I realized how...
Why are you installing Scribus?
Oh, because I'm learning now.
Why are you learning it?
I'm writing for the first time ever a couple of pages for Linux Format on
the
Scribus.
That's awesome.
Wow.
So I'm not sure whether it's going to be any good, but I'll give it a go. Anyway, in the process of installing and going to the Software Center in Ubuntu, I realized there's about 185 graphic-related programs free on the Software Center. That includes obviously the traditional ones like GIMP, Scribus, Inkscape, and other 3D modeling and animation programs that are quite popular. But it's just ridiculous that 185, I'm not saying ridiculous in a bad way, ridiculous in a really good way. I want to see any other platform having this facility embedded in the operating system. 185 different programs, that includes stop animation, 3D modeling, interior design, graphic design, scientific data related graphical representations, and even there's one piece of software called NPM, which is an analysis of MRI scanning. I mean, you got medical softwares included in the software center in Linux.
Yeah,
I want to see Windows doing that. It's just quite amazing. I don't know. I think it's as an operating system goes, you don't really
need anything else.
Anything else?
Just MRI scanning software in
Imagine
your home.
Just letting your kids free with all that kind of software. What could they learn? Just actually downloading them all and playing with
and
it.
And that was my point in the last podcast. That's the point that I was trying to make, and then sort of diverted to a different issue. But that's what I was trying to say. You just all the technology for you is there for you to make your kids geniuses, really.
Yeah.
Yourself, obviously.
I bet the Android market has a lot of these things as well. Now, the Android
market. But you won't be giving a smartphone to a kid. That's what I mean. You have a little laptop in your house. They can play with it, and all the information is there. You don't even have to spend any pennies.
Yeah, but the Ubuntu Software Center doesn't have free Harry Potter books where you've got to click up and change pages.
No, you're right. You know, that's the only drawback.
The Russian one might.
We love Russia, really.
On the topic of kids learning, just since the last podcast, I went to the Mozilla Festival in London, and I met some guys there from Young Rewired State. And for anyone who's not in England or is in England and doesn't know what it is, it's taking open government data and remixing it into useful packages and doing cool stuff with it. And they do it with kids to teach them how to program and about data and how to get involved with the government. And they're now taking on, you can now apply to be part of Young Rewired State 2012, which will happen in August next year. So if you're up to 15 years old, I think, and you want to do some hacking, get in touch with Young Rewired State and see if you can get yourself a place. It'd be really
awesome.
Cool.
That's really good. We should do something on it.
I'm hoping to. Yeah. It's based in Norwich too, so I can hopefully catch a home game. Or at least these guys are based in Norwich, so I can catch a home game while I'm there.
And just to finish it off, as we are in a Mexican restaurant, I discover that you cannot trust boxing judges, especially when a Mexican fighter is fighting in Las Vegas. Juan Manuel Marquez on last Saturday was robbed on a fantastic decision against the best boxer in the world, which is Manny Pacquiao. I want the authorities to do something about it. I want my MP
Can't you
to
go
do
and
something
fight
about
him?
It.
Is that not how it works in the world of boxing?
Absolutely. That's just shocking. All respect.
You beat him up.
All respect to the Filipinos, but honestly, it was just shocking, that decision.
Well, my discovery is something to do with Pulse Audio, which was some weird reason I decided to review for the last issue that went to the printers. It's a weird world, Pulse Audio, when you start looking into it. It's really powerful, like we've talked, but it's so complicated. What I discovered that I didn't know before now is that there's a CLI for Pulse Audio, which is it's a command called PACMD.
PACMD.
Yeah, you launch, type PACMD, Pulse Audio Command.
Oh, right.
And you actually get a prompt where you can load modules and load syncs and sources and things like that that Pulse Audio needs. And cleverly, it does all of this dynamically. So, for example, in the 1.0 release, there's an embedded equalizer. But the only way to enable it is to go into PACMD and load module. I'll tell you exactly what it is. Load module, module-equalizer-sync, and then load up the Qt UI for it.
Oh.
Which is so Pulse Audio. It's very powerful. But so my discovery is that this command line, you can do anything. You can create dummy audio devices so that you could record things from, you know, you could record the output of an internet radio show using a dummy sync and then using dummy sync as a source in Audacity. But frustratingly, you can only do it through this command line, which is very difficult to use. And what I think Pulse Audio is desperately in need of is a friendly GUI to this PACMD command. Some kind of drag and drop modular system where you can, you know, you've got the equalizer icon and a toolbar, you can drag it into your kind of space. That's what it needs.
Yeah. Have you tried entering WTF into this prompt to see what happens?
Mike's in a really great mood today.
Well, yeah, that sounds like great. Write a command line, write a GUI, then someone can fork it into a GTK version.
Andrew, do you have a discovery?
I have some discoveries. Quite a few discoveries. So let's rattle them off quickly. Tamarind flavour. Tamarind flavour Haritos. They soft drink. It's a soft drink that's tamarind flavour. Who would ever have thought of that? And also, it tastes quite nice.
I could tell you whom.
Oh, tell us who. Enlighten us.
It's a Mexican company called...
Mexicans, thanks. next discovery is that apparently we export more to the Republic of Ireland than we do to Russia, Brazil, India and China put together. You hear this as a sort of justification for why we should be lending them bailout money, when to me it just sounds like a massive fail. Imagine that. Imagine exporting more to a nation of 4 million people than we do to Russia, Brazil, India and China put together. That means we're rubbish.
Yeah,
we've known that for quite some time.
We're rubbish at everything. What else? Arch Linux, a cool text-based installation system. Made me feel like I was playing Granny's Garden. It's like some sort of multiple choice adventure game.
It is. Yeah, it's cool.
Like, what do I do? What do I run?
That's a great idea. We should make Granny's Garden into an installer. So it's like instead of feeding dragon apples, you've got to feed it packages or something.
What is Granny's Garden?
It's a text adventure game.
And there will be a link to some Granny's Garden based literature in the extensive podcast notes.
So does this mean you installed Arch Linux? I wanted to know if this means Andrew has installed Arch Linux.
I got a bit away the way through installing Arch Linux, and then I got scared of the witch, and I withdrew.
Fair enough. Was the witch the partition selection screen?
It was. Really, you do need terrifying. another machine running so you can look at the
beginner's guide at the same time. Yeah, yeah.
A bit off more than I could chew there. As I did when I went to Zen Chinese in Bristol.
Was there only one choice?
There were many, many choices. And I found out that the Kung Po chicken, the Bang Bang chicken, and the braised belly pork are all absolutely vile.
We won't be going there next time.
Can we record the podcast?
Although for legal reasons, I should point out that everything else on there... huge menu of about 200 meals, probably great. And that's all the weather.
That was brilliant. Thanks,
I've just thought of a great idea. A lot of people say they're installing Arch Linux on their machine and they haven't got the network up yet, so they can't access the documentation. Arch should put a phone number there and you can call it and you can film and say, right, I'm stuck at the
01225
44 44 is that Linux? Mike. No, don't ask for Mike. Mike won't be around.
Ask for my replacement, whoever he is.
Is that the new Mike?
Or she. Thanks, guys.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Cool.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Not missing anyone, are we?
Halfway point.
And with such restaurant-loving antics, we come to the halfway point of this podcast. Still to come, rants and raves, speak your brains, and of course, the wonderful open ballot, and probably some more references to Mission Burrito.
Right, so now it's time for our semi-new section. I'm still calling it new. It's Rants and Raves. Yeah. And we're all loving it still. And
yeah.
Mike is going to kick things off today with a rant about...
Yep. I've got 1 minute and I'm going to rant about Commodore, but not the Commodore as you know it.
Okay.
Wait and see.
Wait, Mike, are you ready?
Yes.
Go.
Right. Back in the 1980s and early 90s, many of us here had Amigas, and they were awesome. They had a fully graphical user interface, preemptive multitasking, while DOS was still a command line and Linux barely existed. So we loved Amigas. Unfortunately, Commodore were rubbish and went bankrupt. Now, somebody has bought up the rights to the Commodore brand and set up a company called Commodore USA. And instead of doing anything cool with it, instead of doing anything imaginative and useful, they've made a PC that's got an Atom chip in it. And they've made their own Linux Mint spin-off, as if the world didn't need any more Linux distributions. This is Commodore USA just making what I deem as pointless machines. They could have made some awesome stuff. They could have made some PowerPC kit running AROS, the Amiga Research Operating System, the free software Amiga OS clone. They had so much possibility here, but all they're doing is just tarnishing the name by just making really generic, boring, lame, well, they might be useful to some people, boxers.
Great. Awesome. That was a fantastic rant, Mike.
I had to hold back on that slightly because...
Graham is now going to lighten the mood again with a rave about something fantastic.
Yep, something fantastic.
Unless Mike kills himself by drinking the...
Like snorting hot pepper sauce.
Chili powder, pepper.
What's that?
Paste.
Cholula.
Sorry, Graham, guys. Please rave.
Okay, here's my rave. Mike Saunders, this is your life. 11 years ago, you started writing for a niche Linux magazine after the fall of Amiga format, and you've been writing for that magazine ever since. You made a fantastic contribution. You really set the editorial style. You've been a great personality, and at the same time, you've taught a lot of people about how brilliant Linux is and how to be a passionate contributor. You've written open source software. You've helped countless people phone up and forget their passports and forget their passwords.
I also do a good line of passports.
You've written loads of software. You've done some of the best tutorials we ever did. The LPI series was fantastic. Mike, you've made a great contribution. You've been a great leader of this podcast. I really don't know what we're going to do without you or what I'm going to do for the next 10 seconds. But I wish you all the very best.
Don't take this.
Wish you all the very best of luck in Austria, Mike, and thanks for being on the team.
Aww. Thank you, everybody. That was worth the £40 I gave you this morning. I'll still be writing for you, so I won't be too far away. And you're all welcome to come over and see me as well. So, yeah. It's all right. The replacement will probably be better than me.
Yeah, probably.
Just think of it that
way. In another 11 years.
Brilliant. Thanks, everybody, for all the wonderful praise. Let's go on to Speak Your Brains. I don't know if you guys want this section to continue, because normally by now I would give an email address for people to email and then complain slightly about the length of the
I suppose email me. I don't mind submissions in XML. You know, if people want to send them in XML, I'll just read out the XML.
That'll be the punishment. It will discourage people from doing it.
Okay, well, Speak Your Brains is here to stay, everybody. My favourite section where you, the listener, email us and with your opinions and we read them out, or even your questions when they're fairly short and don't include code. So email the new me, graham.morrison@futurenet.com, with Speak Your Brains in the subject line, and he will read them out in future. So we start with AJ Graham, who says, I'm currently evaluating different geographical analysis software for the company I work for. We've always used Windows, but a lot of the open source software I use is more integrated in Linux. So I thought I'd dual boot my business Dell laptop with Linux so my management team can see the benefits and beauty of a free operating system. So I partitioned the disk and stuck Fedora 14 on the blank partition alongside Windows 7. However, there were issues with a fan control and the machine became too hot to use comfortably. That's the nay. The yay is that I stuck Mint 11 onto it and it all just worked. I installed the required repositories and got all the most recent software and away I went. Given the cost of proprietary GIS software, this is a massive win. As an added bonus, I found that Davmail allows me to get my Outlook Exchange account via Thunderbird. Go free software.
That's brilliant. That is really, really good. That's a great email.
That is a good email. It kind of puzzles me that Fedora 14 didn't work properly and ramped up his Fantomax, and then I guess Fedora 14 is a little bit older, but Mint 11 worked fine.
It could just be down to the most recent kernel, you know, and it just happened that the Mint one was 6 months later.
I guess it could be, yeah, because you wouldn't think there'd be many other things that would change between that. Next up, a question from Justin Boisvert or something. He says, what is your opinion on using rolling releases as operating systems for servers? From what I hear, it's a bad idea since sometimes the packages are automatically updated for you, so you could have some sort of vulnerability, but I'd rather hear it from you guys.
I think it's a bad idea because you only use a handful of packages, you know, say whatever it is, the LAMP stack, you know, you want security updates, but why are you so interested in getting the latest Apache features? You're never going to use them.
Yeah, and it can also break things as well. If you've got a CMS you've installed from the repositories, you want just security fixes for that. You don't want it to change any code whatsoever. You need that stability. Yeah. So, I know rolling releases are all the rage at the moment. But
no, not as a server.
Not for business.
There is
desktop.
An Arch server derivative that's aimed at making it more stable and more suitable for servers. Mm. So I don't know what that's like, but that might be worth looking into if you're interested. But I would steer clear.
Yeah. It'd be interesting, though, an Arch server derivative, if it had some of the strengths of Arch, but also without everything changing all the time.
That KISS simplistic BSD style init system and all of the niceties that go with it.
Yeah, and a granny's garden installer. And lastly, from me, here's Connor Holtzman. He says, I see no reason to use any distribution but Debian. It can be as stable or as bleeding edge as you'd like, and it's infinitely free and customizable. Not to mention the fact that its repositories are the largest, most well-maintained and straightforward out of any distribution. I don't consider Ubuntu true freedom anymore. It's just a bloated piece of commercial crap. Why does a derivative of Debian have more users than Debian itself? Why does a derivative of said derivative, Mint, now have more hits per day on DistroWatch? This is getting ridiculous. I don't mean to hate on CentOS, which is useful for servers, or Red Hat for enterprise environments, but all these spin-offs are just killing me. Can't people just settle down on two or three distros? Oh, and I love the podcast, guys.
That was a rant and a rave. You totally disagree with him, don't you?
Why,
Mike?
What's my opinion at the moment? I have to check my pager.
The proliferation of distros is a good thing because choice is good.
You see, well, I think the thing is he's got to look back a bit, and Ubuntu got a lot of success back when Debian's installer wasn't so good and it was often seen as very old. The release schedule is shorter now and the installer is better, so arguably you could say Debian is the one true distro.
Thinking this through, I'm going to have to ask John, but is this like religion? is Debian like the old Judaism?
John's thinking very carefully what to say here, lest he...
Maybe. You learn when doing a theology degree that every essay you write boils down to maybe. You say it in various combinations of 3,000, 5,000 word combinations, but it boils down to maybe, so...
Is it dead easy to get a theology degree, then?
You'd be surprised.
It's all a matter of opinion.
That sounds like good training for real life, then.
Yeah. I think better theology from that. I just don't have a better answer to Graham's question right now.
It was sprung on you rather quickly. Such a deep matter. But yeah, I think Debian is the sort of stock distro I would recommend for someone who wanted a long-term supported machine with well-tested software. Just put it on there. It's about as close to a standard as we have in the Linux world.
One thing I do think is really interesting is the difference between Debian and, you know, why Ubuntu was useful at the time. I think hardware support in the kernel has come on leaps and bounds in the last 7 years when Ubuntu launched. So, you know, a lot of what made Ubuntu great was integrating proprietary drivers and whatnot. Mm. But now, support for Wi-Fi chipsets, support for almost all video cards now, works out of the box on a vanilla kernel. Yeah. So there's no need to go tweaking the kernel to get great hardware support.
Yeah.
It's there by default, so it doesn't matter what you use.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there we go.
They were good.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Email graham.morrison@futurenet.com. Is that with two R's and one S? Or
yeah, two R's, one S.
Excellent.
Like Jim Morrison.
Great. Any relation?
As the restaurant fills up with customers for the lunchtime rush, it's now time for open ballots. That smells lovely. Whatever it is.
Oh, getting ready for some of that.
We have to wrap this up quickly. And
we do.
I like the way you said wrap there.
Is burritos like monotheism?
I'm sorry, John.
Maybe.
So the question that we asked this fortnight is who should buy WebOS? We're assuming that it's for sale here, aren't we?
Well, it could well end up for sale, yeah. HP doesn't seem to know what to do with it.
So. No, there is speculation that HP doesn't know what to do with WebOS because they've discontinued that tablet thing, haven't they?
They did. They sold it at a bonkers
really,
cheap
really
price.
Cheap.
Yeah. It looked a really good tablet, and I really like WebOS from what I've seen of it. I've never had the chance to use it, but it looks like a clean, attractive, fluid Linux-based OS for the win.
So the question now is what should happen to it next?
What did our chums say?
So the question was phrased as who should buy it. ETD says no one should buy it. We have enough fragmentation in Linux with Android.
There's a theme evolving.
The fantastic name Rothgar. I hope you're not having any more trouble with that monster now. Says that Amazon or open source should buy it.
Open source should buy it?
Yes.
Does he mean... Hey?
hang on. If HP would just get behind the platform, it could be truly successful. Although that doesn't look like they're going to do it. If Amazon bought it, I'd be scared. I would never see WebOS on another phone. Instead, it would be a locked Kindle prison without any room to stretch its legs.
Do people stretch their legs in prison?
What I really want from all these new hardware manufacturers like Apple and Google and whoever buys WebOS and Amazon, what I really want, I want them to make a nice, simple interface and a nice, simple computer that I can do the things they want with. But I want them to give me the choice to do whatever I like with the hardware as well. That's all I want.
You want make a sideload app.
I want a sideload app, and Android does give you that, in fact, but I want root as well. I want to be able to do whatever I want, not just sideload apps. And then, you know, they can put on whatever proprietary stuff they like. Just give me the choice.
Well, I think Rothgar is possibly scarred from his battles with Grendel, because he is the only person who thinks Amazon would be a bad job. Mohan says that Amazon would be an excellent candidate for ownership of WebOS. Penguin Dienwa says, I'm hoping Amazon will buy it. It seems like a much better platform than an old forked version of Android. Assuming this is for the Kindle. Possibly just being silly, Xiao says that he thinks Microsoft should buy it. Then they can put it on those lovely Nokia phones they currently put Windows Phone 7 on instead. Rakios says, I think they should sell it to me. At £2, I couldn't quite afford Comets, but I'll offer £1.75 for WebOS. And the Anonymous Moose reckons that Tux Radar should buy it. It can't be that expensive. No one else wants it.
We should make a bid.
We should make a bid.
Yeah.
I might contact HP after this podcast.
What would we do with it, though? I mean, I actually agree with that first guy. I think just let WebOS die.
But it looks cool.
It was nice. It was nice. But it's in the past. It didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work to sell their devices. And it's just not worth it, in my mind, expending energy and effort worrying about it and trying to keep it alive. There was nothing that innovative about it that Android can't do, for example.
Well, yeah, I think when it first arrived on the Palm devices, its multitasking, that card's functionality was really innovative for its time and smooth and stuff, while iOS was totally single-tasking.
I think it might have succeeded. Because it was limited to just Palm devices when it first launched, a big advantage Android had, like the old Apple-Microsoft divide, was that Android turned up on everything and Palm was limited to that one form factor.
And there were no
apps. One price factor, and there were no apps.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much been one of the biggest failures in computing history, hasn't it? It wasn't so long ago that HP was talking about putting it on everything. It was going to be their standard platform.
Less than a year ago, I think, wasn't
it? Yeah, they were going to put it on all their computers. They were like making a big challenge to Microsoft.
On their printers.
Yeah, but you know, saying we want to get to the point where we don't even put Windows on our computers, basically. We have our own platform now. Yeah. You're going to be like Apple running the hardware and the software. Boom, a few months later, completely closed. HP has its troubles, but that was one pretty spectacular slip-up.
It's a bad 12 months for HP, really.
Very bad 12 months, yeah. But, carry on, Andrew.
Well,
a
few people have also said printers. But Stephen Michael Kellett is the only person to have come up with the suggestion that Canonical could buy WebOS. Because WebOS reminds him so much of Unity that it would be an interesting 2D counterpart.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
If they actually put Unity on top of WebOS and then used WebOS for embedded devices.
It's a good point.
They could own the whole lot.
But then it wouldn't be free, and Canonical really cares about that.
Do they really care about that?
Yeah, it's really important.
I don't think the Canonical do care about free.
Smelling really good in here right now. I really want to eat.
I want to eat. So there are more comments than that, but I'm getting hungry now.
Yeah.
So let's just...
Thanks for stopping us eating, listeners.
Hang on, the listeners provide us with money so we can buy food.
Do they actually provide us with any money?
The ones who subscribe to Linux Format do.
Of course.
If you want to support this podcast, you should subscribe to Linux Format.
Because we are quite poor. Yeah.
The ones that send us whiskey are good as well.
Yeah, that too. And those devices that you twist, Rubik's Cubes.
Rubik's Cubes.
Those devices that you twist.
I'm feeling more and more like Rick Perry every day.
Yeah, me too.
So, good work, everybody. I think it's been a well-earned food-eating scenario coming up.
Yeah, that went quite well.
Yeah, it did.
So hope it isn't too noisy in the background.
No, but there's nothing we can do about that. You've run it through Audacity, so...
Yeah, hopefully.
So we're off to go and get some lovely burritos now. You too can find out where you can eat lovely burritos in Bath, Bristol, Oxford, or
Reading
at
missionburritos.co.uk. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
Bye.